Tell me. Spoiler ready. We're ready.
So the whole thing was about getting the mole, right? Spoiler alert, if nobody's seen it, doesn't want to see it, but whatever, I'm going to tell it.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Greetings there, Ted Word, episode 92 this week.
That is right, 92. How you feeling?
I feel okay. I was on a training ride in some terrible wind today we'll talk about in a second, but I have a big beer. Let's get to the beer if we could start first.
Let's crack it.
Yeah. So what do you have this week?
All right. So this week, we've been celebrating Anne's birthday all weekend.
The whole weekend. Her mother's labor must have been like awful to go on an entire weekend.
72 hours of birthday fun. No, but we went over to friend's house last night, and that we had just, you know, pizza and beer. And I picked up this Fremont six pack. It's called Field to Ferment. And it's a fresh hop pale ale, and it's their seasonal Fremont. You know, we're fans of that Fremont. We had that awesome abominable bomb thing. But this is just one of their run-of-the-mill IPAs, but it's still kind of amazing. Here it goes.
All right. Oh, a can.
Can.
Yeah.
Little six-pack. So we drank five of them last night, and I was like, ooh, I'm going to save that last one for the show tomorrow.
That's what humans do. They plan for the future.
So how's your big beer?
Real quick, before I get to my beer, I wanted to let you know I was at the store and I saw a six pack of, they had all the carts, the Golden Roads, right?
Uh-huh.
And they had one of their six packs of IPA, which I don't even remember what it was. You probably know.
Ride On or Wolf Pup or?
No, I don't know.
Wolf in the Weeds.
Wolf in the Weeds, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, it was like $17 for a six pack. I was like,
there you go.
What? And then I saw.
Pricey.
The Oscar Blues 15 pack for $18. So I thought, well, you know, I don't really feel like spending a lot of money today. So I got 15 beers for 18 instead of six for 17. But with that said, I'm drinking one out of El Segundo, California.
Oh, nice. That was almost there. Yeah.
Surf and Bird, double India pale ale. You can kind of see the bottle there of a bird, well, surfing. And this one is 1.6 ounces, I guess. It's too dark in here. I can't see. But double IPA. And you said yours is a regular IPA, correct?
Yes. So you beat me on an ABV for sure.
Probably so. What is your ABV?
Mine's six, and I bet yours is like a 9 or 8.9 or...
Man, they make it like impossible to see here. I don't even see it. It's not here. Oh, there it is.
Oh, it's got to be there.
8%. Yeah, 8%.
8%.
So I'm not sure, but lately, all of these IPAs and stuff, man, they've all been like so citrusy and fruity and grapefruity. And I'm just getting tired of that. And hazy and sweet.
Uh-huh.
I like those malty piney ones, you know, but this looks like another. You can tell by the color, too. When the color comes out, it looks like a grapefruit, like squeezed grapefruit, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, let's take a sip here. Yeah, apart from the core. Well, no, actually, no. It is a bit more, a little bit more piney, but on the sweet side, it's good, though. Yeah, this is really good, actually. But the color is more that, like, it doesn't have that golden look. It's almost like, I don't know, it's almost like a hazy. It's hard to say. Yeah, it's piney on the front and then finishes a little bit sweet. Not bad.
That's a good blend. I like that. I like that in the IPA.
Yeah, it is good. How does yours taste?
Mine is very similar. It has that piney front, you know, aromatic. It hits you with a fresh, you know, foresty smell on the palate, and then it does finish with a little bit of citrus, which I don't mind. I like the Citra hop.
Yeah,
I think this is Simcoe and Citra, so I think that's how you get that nice blend.
Right. Yeah. If they didn't write so small, I'd be able to read it. But these things, I swear, it's like they think drinkers are all young people or something. Well, I mean, I'm not old, but can't. Or at least people with good vision.
Oh, we're old. I think we're old.
Oh, maybe part of it. You have good vision and then you drink so much and then like you can't read it anymore. So they want you to get more to opening beers than reading, I suppose. So how was your week?
Yes. Week was crazy. Work has been great. We're bringing a new system online, so I'm having a lot of damn ma'am fun.
So a new system to like store all your content and hold all your...
Exactly, to produce and store and access all of our media files across all the channels. So it was actually, it's fun on my side because I love streamlining anything. So as we get this system, it's built on Salesforce.
Hey, I've seen your desktop. You don't streamline anything.
But you have seen my desktop, but you don't know how I look for things. Everything's driven off search. You know, if I have metadata tags on everything. So it's all about search.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay. I gotcha. It's all like wildly sprayed about, but you can find anything based on what you keyworded it as.
Exactly. You know, the file naming structure, I'm very heavy on that. And then you can find whatever you want. As long as you've named something properly and it's in the proper system, you can go and you can grab it. It's kind of like Frank's Garage.
My problem with that, though, is yes, I do file name things. And sometimes I do search, like if I need to search for a file and I just start typing keywords or something. But I can't remember what I name things from like years ago. So I have to have everything like organized by like date, you know, because for some reason, the way my brain works is I'm like, oh, I did that 3 years ago. Like I just know the date, maybe not down to the day, but I could find it within a year time frame.
No, date is a universal thing. I think, you know, when I'm coming up with these systems and when I've done my own ad hoc systems, date is just a driver for everything. And it's kind of the universality of it allows you to correspond things, you know, that people are working on, regardless of how they categorize it or how you categorize it.
Right.
If you know that you talked about it last month, then at least everybody has the basis of saying like, this was about a month ago, go look for your file in that space of time, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So with all of your, well, like you say, streamlining and everything in the systems, do you guys use like the Adobe suite? Is that what you guys are using for like production and editing and all that? Or do you not get into that side of it?
We do use the Premiere and we use Premiere and Avid. So those are the two main big ones. But as far as like file sharing and things like that, that's not their cup of tea. So it kind of leaves us set to our own devices as far as, you know, routing stuff, getting things for approvals and all of that. So it feels like every couple of years, every 3 years or so, we get a new system online that's going to solve all our problems. And then we have to learn that system and then we're comfortable with it and we hate it. And it's this love-hate thing. And then they replace it with something new and better. And then you're like, oh, well, that old system was so much better than this because we figured out how to use it over the past 3 years. And I'm like, no, this new thing is actually better. Every system that we've gotten into has been better. It's just about the level of support that the company can throw behind the current system. So, you know, right when something's new, that's the best time to kind of get your requests in and be like, oh, you wanted to do this. We needed to do this, you know? So that's the space we're in right now. So we're in the honeymoon support stage phase where we ask for everything and then we get a little bit and then we just keep getting a little bit and a little bit more. So,
and it's interesting how that works because you go to a new system and the old system's better because you figured it out. But the reason you went to the new system is because you knew the old system so well that you also knew all of its weaknesses. The new system has all of the weaknesses solved and repaired that you complained about with the old system. But because you don't know how to use the new system, the old system was better. And you get caught in this like weird feedback loop that by the time you figure out this new system, you've learned its weaknesses, which drives you to move onto another new system. You know what I mean? And because at work this year, we're onto a new database system too, for our special education IEPs and everything, right? And all the paperwork gets put into the system that we've used for like a decade, maybe more than that, actually. And this year we've moved to a new system, which is much better, more robust in many ways. But because you're learning this system, you're like, where's that thing again? And you're like emailing and you're calling support and you're calling other people that you work with, and nobody can figure it out. And then when you figure it out, you're like, oh, wow, it is better, but it took me forever to get here. I don't think I can remember the next time I need to get here. And yeah, it's systems are kind of bizarre in that way.
It's awesome. I love the I love sifting through like complaints and people's pain points, and and you kind of really have to diagnose whether a pain point is a problem with the software, or whether it's a problem with learning curve, or whether it's a problem with business process.
All of
the above.
So
there's three big buckets you can throw. But you can always be like, all right, we're not having a meeting about where, you know, because Jim doesn't tell Ted, or Ted doesn't tell Jim what the trailers are for this week. So that's a business process problem. You know what I mean? I need to tell Jimmy what we're watching this week. So, but that's on me.
You know, just, I guess we don't need to keep going down this rabbit hole, but just really quick. It's funny the way you kind of laid that out, because people are creatures of habit and they hate change. And even if the change is like put the button on the left instead of the right, I mean, I'm sure, you know, well, I've complained, you know, you're like, well, wait a minute. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. I have this Bluetooth plug that goes for my hot water heater pump, so it can pump the hot water heater to the far side of the house, so we don't have to waste like gallons and gallons of water waiting for the hot water heater.
Yeah.
So I had the whole thing set up, and the way it would read is turn on and you set a time, turn off, you set a time, turn on, you set it, you know, so you could do it throughout the day or whatever, however you want to do it. Now you just say like the time, and then the next time, the next time, the next time. And it assumes that if you're turning on, the next time can only be turning off. So they removed the little icon that said on and off. Do you follow me?
Huh. Yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking like, well, how do I know it's going to be off? Well, the second time, if the first time is on, the second time can only be off. It's not going to turn it on again. But by moving that those two words on and off, just by deleting those words, it leaves you in this state of confusion. The first time you use it, you're like, well, will this work? I don't know if this is going to work. And then you wake up and you're like, I hear it running. It must have worked. Anyway, it's just so bizarre how like little things like that could throw people for a loop. And then can you imagine an entire system and an entire company of an entire industry changing? I mean, it's got to be just an IT mayhem on some level.
It's amazing.
Overall, I mean, I kind of touched a little bit with my work too, as far as processes and things, but that's not really the week. What I will talk about though is the wind,
right?
And today's training ride. So I went out for a ride this morning. And,
okay.
Oh man, the wind is just howling, right? So I'm going up Figueroa Mountain, mm-hmm. and it was like you come around a corner, heavy headwind. Come around another corner, wonderful tailwind. And it's back and forth. And I'm like, man, this sucks. But then it's great. Then it sucks. I'm like, it'll just average out when I get to the top, you know?
Right.
Whatever that looks like. So I'm on this dirt section of the climb. And this climb can be like in the Tour de France or something. I mean, it's like so long and steep. And there's like a mile long dirt section and all this. So I come around the corner on the dirt section, and I'm sweaty and sunblocked. So the wind, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, it was at least a 70 mile an hour gust that kicks up. So it picks up all this dirt. Now I'm just this like muck of sweat, sunblock, and like dirt mud thing that's all over me now. Just pelted by the dirt.
Yeah.
And literally, I'm on the side of the road. Literally, it blows me off the bike, and I'm about to go down this canyon because the wind was...
Ugh.
So I put my foot down and like jump kind of, I don't jump off the bike, but like I put my feet down and, you know, the bike's, I'm still straddling it. And so I stand there and I have to like brace myself against the wind so I didn't like go down the canyon. So I was just thinking, I'm like, all right, I'm turning it around here. This is way too dangerous now. So the wind was howling so hard, the higher up you would get. And I was like, yeah, I can't go over the top of this thing, man. I'm not willing to die today, you know?
Well, you've been medevaced off a mountain before.
Yeah, that was a broken collarbone, though. Yeah, I don't need to do that again. Yeah, ribs and collarbone and all that stuff. But yeah, I don't need to do that.
Ugh.
Yeah, so the higher I was getting, the windier it was getting, and it was time to turn around. It was just getting too dangerous. But ride finished pretty awesome, and it's really beautiful out temperature-wise and stuff, and a lot of people out on the bike today, but everybody's battling the wind. So again, with the themes, we have another little theme going on.
But I wonder if I have a different theme than I think your theme, but it is definitely a themed pair of trailers tonight. So let's get into it. Which one do you want to do first? I love both these movies.
Let's do Doolittle first.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So the opening says Alice in Wonderland. Is that the Johnny Depp version, can I assume?
Yes, Alice in Wonderland.
Right. Is that the Johnny Depp version of Alice in Wonderland?
That is the Johnny Depp version of Alice in Wonderland, yes.
Yeah, so that was the Johnny Depp version. Okay. It does have an Alice in Wonderland feel to it. And then Malawi? No, what's the kid? Malawi?
Malawi? From which?
Magalawi? No, the Mowgli.
Oh, Mowgli. 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 Yeah. Jungle Book. Yeah. Jungle Book.
So it does have like the Mowgli feel to it.
Yes.
So I kind of get those two feels. And then, of course, as far as like the theme, I mean, I think is the obvious theme of like the jungle type thing, right? But is this a Disney movie? I couldn't really tell.
So my theme was basically the whole idea of, again, the legacy cell of Doolittle. It just makes you believe that it's a Disney movie.
Exactly.
They lay in everything all the way down to having Robert Downey Jr. Robert Downey Jr. is like Disney royalty. He got his handprints on the Disney Plaza as a Disney legend for the work he did on Marvel. And now the Marvel kind of gravy train is over, per se, for his Iron Man part. And he got this gig, and it just screams Disney.
Totally does. But it never says Disney.
Because it's not Disney, because it's Universal.
Oh, it doesn't say Universal. Well, at the very end, I think it does.
It says Universal in the corner on the billing page.
Right.
It says Universal, but Universal is clearly like not putting their name on the front end of this commercial, on the front end of this trailer, because it's not intended to be sold as, I think they're trying to use the Disney IP without being a Disney movie. You know, I think they're trying to gain the cachet. And, you know, the thing that really got me was the fact that this is releasing in January.
Right.
To me, January, February is kind of like this dead zone for movies. Like, you know, who's going to the movie theaters? You know, you have the hangover from the holidays. People are just getting back to work, getting up and going again. People are going back to school after, you know, 2-3 weeks off of school, you know. So it is in this dead zone, but it's really like trying to establish Universal in this family space that's one of the only few months left that Disney and Fox haven't claimed, you know, for the owning the weekends. So it's intriguing that I think everybody comes to this conclusion. And even after knowing it's Universal, after watching it a few times, I felt like this is a Disney movie, you know?
So I kind of stepped backwards into your trap of a theme. Is that how that worked?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I couldn't agree more that it does have that feel to it. And then when you look at the talking animals and the way the top hat looks and just all of that stuff. I'll tell you, though.
Everything.
An amazing rundown of names at the end.
Yes, it is. It is a high-powered movie that they're releasing in January. It's like how much is Universal spending for all these names, you know, to put it on in this space, in this time frame. So obviously they're hoping for a lot of, you know, follow up, a lot of people wanting to own this, the longevity of a child's movie that, you know, will be a loved classic that people will watch for years to come. But it's a hard sell for me.
Hard sell for you to go see it, or hard sell because on its timing? What makes it a hard sell?
Oh yeah, the hard sell on the timing. It's like
I gotcha.
You know, I think as an executive, it would be like I would want to put this, you know, April, in that April timeframe. So you kind of like you edge out the early, you know, the late spring kind of space where you're still getting into, you know, the summer blockbusters. But if it does well, it can kind of stretch and eat away at some of the early, you know, big blockbusters.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels like a great movie. I will definitely go see this.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think I will too. I don't know. Again, being in January and after the holidays and everything, I don't think this is going to be a theater one. But one thing, though, I was thinking this past week when we get to what we're watching and stuff is doing this podcast. Without it, I would be lost in the movie space because let's say I click on HBO, for example, and I'm like, oh, we covered that. Let's watch it. Or we covered this one. Let's watch it and whatever that is. But otherwise, I would be going into all this stuff blind. I'm like, I don't know what, you know, such and such movie is. Like, what is this? And you would be like, last week we talked about.
Yeah.
Clint Eastwood in The Mule. If we didn't cover The Mule, I would have gone in blind being like, Clint Eastwood movie. When did this thing come out? You know, and I would have no idea about about like the, I hate to say pop culture, because I mean, it's kind of that, but it's more just on release of movies that you're interested in.
Yeah, it's like the movie landscape.
The movie landscape. Yeah. So I'm sure when I see this come across the wire on streaming, it's going to be like Doolittle. Oh, yeah, we covered that. Let's watch it tonight, boys. Which then brings us to The Jungle Cruise.
The Jungle Cruise.
Now, this one for me looks, I really like this one. I think I like the look of this one much better than Doolittle. Mm-hmm. And this one is actually a Disney.
And Disney's not afraid to put their name on it.
You know, it's one of those things where, like, when everybody compares their product to the product, it's like, well, then why wouldn't I just go get the product?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah, you know, like, this is much better than that, you know, and we're always comparing. You know what I'm saying, though, right?
Oh, that's so funny, because it's like, so just to say now, Doolittle is like Kirkland's.
There you go.
It's like the signature brand, you know, it's made in the same factory where all the Disney movies are made, except it doesn't have the Disney cachet of the Disney name.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, so yeah. So Jungle Book, we were at Disneyland last weekend and we were on the Jungle Book. See, that's a problem. Jungle Cruise, the movie Jungle Cruise. We were at Disneyland last weekend and we were on the Jungle Cruise listening to our captain, our little boat captain.
Here we go. You're reading my notes again. I know where you're going.
Give all the jokes. And as he gives the jokes, some of the jokes are new. Yeah, not new, but some of the jokes you've heard like the past 5 years. And then some of the jokes you've heard since you were a child and, you know, it's ingrained in your brain from every single time you go on the Jungle Cruise. So when he says the backside of water, the eighth wonder of the world, I melted in my heart a little bit. But, my daughter Audrey came to me because she goes, oh, so at least they did the thing that you were worried about them not giving the nod to the ride or to the cruise, you know?
It's so funny, too, because I said, you know, at least Dwayne didn't disappoint with his corny Jungle Cruise jokes. You know, like with the guys just hanging around, you know, and
no, it's great. And I love the way they took it to the next level too. You know, it's right along the lines of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Ah, you are reading my notes.
But when he gives a little nod to the guy who shot a little blow dart at him a little too close, you know, it was just like, I was like, oh, this is great. This is like live action Jungle Cruise. And this is the last thing, and then I'll let you read whatever notes I haven't destroyed for you yet. But it really opens up a marketing campaign where they did this with Spider-Man and they did it with the Pirates of the Caribbean. I'm going to go to Disneyland more often now, just hoping that Emily Blunt and The Rock Dwayne Johnson are going to be on the Jungle Cruise, like piloting the boat, you know, because they're going to have to do this when it gets closer, you know, like the spring 2020, they're going to be at both. They're going to take them to both the parks and they're going to make them, you know, drive the boats for a day as a publicity stunt. And it's going to be amazing. And people are going to have it on their social media. And they're, you know, the lucky people that are at the park that day on a Wednesday, someday, a couple weeks before the release of the movie. That's my guess. I have no inside information on how it happens.
Mere speculation on your part.
Mere speculation. But they have to do it. They have to do it as the long lead.
I couldn't agree more with that.
Right?
I really enjoyed the Rube Goldberg escape out of the top of that room in the what was that anyway? It was like
a library museum kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. She was trying to get some things, and it's like the Rube Goldberg escape, and she winds up getting out, and then. But I'll tell you though, the traffic in the opening scene. I mean, it just looks horrible.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it just looks awful. There's so many cars everywhere and buses, and it's just gridlock, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Also talking about, we're looking at the Jungle Cruise as a ride and Pirates of the Caribbean as a ride.
Mm-hmm.
They did do a Swiss Family Robinson movie, though, right?
Yeah, they did a Swiss Family Robinson movie, and I believe it will be available on Disney Plus day one. But I don't know, but they no longer have Swiss Family Robinson and the parks.
Right, but would you have considered that a ride, you know, the treehouse? Or is that just kind of like, I don't know, what would you even consider that?
Yeah, it's definitely not a ride, but it is an attraction. I think it's an attraction.
And what is it now?
Now it's Tarzan's treehouse.
Oh, okay, so they changed it all from like the radio that they were trying to get signal from, and it's no longer, that radio's gone and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, they just use their animated Tarzan kind of layout to do a bunch of musical jungle theme things. So, you know, I think, and it's probably prime for another revamp soon, you know, but I think they're focusing on bigger parts of the park. You know, it's a go-to to hide out from the sun and let the kids kind of just like fool around in a place with when you're not running around.
Yeah. So with regard to the trailer, I do have a few complaints on the editing and the cutting of the trailer.
Okay.
Did it seem like the voiceover of Dwayne Johnson when he comes swinging onto the boat, that voiceover for some reason didn't mesh well with the visual of him swinging into the boat as he's making his entrance?
Yeah, I did notice something a little disjointed about it. But I didn't, I guess I just put it out of my mind quickly. What was your take on it? What did you think? You just didn't like it?
Well, I think you just said it best. It seemed disjointed. Like he's doing this voiceover as he's swinging in, but it didn't go with the visual of him swinging in, because maybe the swinging in should have been like just, I don't know, a musical score, you know, like a dramatic musical score of him swinging in. And then when he lands and comes walking through the door, then he can make the statements to the camera or something. Yeah, it just seemed a bit disjointed.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's not a rule, but sometimes when something like this happens, we've started the scene, we've gone from Emily Blunt's, you know, her escaping her calamity or whatever, her Rube Goldberg escape from the library. And then we get straight into the jungle, and it starts with the voiceover of Dwayne Johnson without seeing him. So if you start off where you haven't seen the person who's in the voiceover, and then you go through a few, you know, shots, then you finally get to seeing the person that is the voiceover in the actual scene of the shot, because you haven't established that those are the same people, that can kind of create this cognitive dissonance where you see him swinging on the vine and he's talking over it, but his mouth isn't moving because he's not talking in that actual scene. So your mind's trying to reconcile these things. And even while he's dusting off his hat, he's still not talking. So we haven't established that it's him, but the whole audience knows that these two actors, the actor that is speaking and the actor that we're watching, they're one and the same, but we haven't established it within the landscape of the trailer. So it kind of needs like one establishing shot of Dwayne The Rock Johnson saying hello or something before we get into the jungle. And then we could have reconciled a little more quickly.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And then the second one comes at about a minute 57 when they're in the scene with going over the waterfall and she says she can't swim.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he makes like the comment, oh, you know, like you're going on a jungle cruise and you can't swim. So, you know, whatever it is. Then he does this stare.
Yes.
And he looks back at her and says the price just went up. And then they start getting into the action sequence. But it's, again, it's this disjointed jump cut that you could tell isn't what's the way it's going to be happening in the movie. But it's like they're trying to cut the two pieces or three pieces together. to make the sequence much shorter to fit the time constraints of a trailer. But yet when you're watching it, it's just the jump cuts are too like jagged.
Right. I agree. Yeah. It's definitely from a different parts of that same space. So it is super jump cutty to make it all fit.
Yeah. And it just didn't come across as like, it didn't have a flow to it that helped you with the story. It more had like, we just want to get out a comical statement so we can get the quick laugh to get you to want to go see the movie without worrying much about the visual that you're not really understanding or whatever.
Yeah. And I think that's by design. So even though you're thrown off as an audience member, maybe you're forgiving because you're excited about the content. You know, I think there's some give and take here where you're like, oh, upon analyzing it as a piece of art unto itself, it's not as good. You know, it lacks some of the hand holding that audiences want. But just the content and the fact that this has been so long coming is forgiveness enough to say, like, give us more. We want, what are you going to do with the Jungle Cruise? What are you going to do with this ride that's been at Disneyland forever, you know?
Yeah, and let's face it. I mean, Disney is not an art house production company that's trying to cut together an Academy Award winning movie trailer like A24 might.
Right.
But at the same time.
Right, exactly.
It's not going to keep me from wanting to see the movie. So it's just nitpicking on trailers, since that's kind of what we do for a living.
You make money on this? What? I don't make it.
don't tell anybody that we don't. Come on.
Okay.
Send us free beer, please.
So, and then of course, when we talk, since we're comparing the two trailers, two movies, this one comes out July 24th. So
summer blockbuster.
You know that Disney just throws their foot in and they're like, we are taking this weekend and nobody's going to see anything else this weekend except for this.
Do we know what the competition is for that weekend yet or not really? Or are we way too far out?
Oh, I don't. We are not too far out, but I didn't even look because people just plot out these weekends in the summer, especially, you know, years in advance. So,
oh, wow.
Disney has had this probably for a couple of years, I'm sure. That's the mixed blessing, is that you know that you have a launch date, but if you're in production in one of these movies, you're the director or the producer of this movie, then you have a release date, which means you have to finish all of your work before that launch date, you know?
And that's why they put in 20 hours a day sometimes.
Yeah, especially those last 3 months, you know?
For sure.
But does this feel like, were you a fan of The Mummy?
I like The Mummy.
So Brendan Fraser's Mummy, that franchise was great. We Anne and I are big fans of it. We love the kind of slapstick, you know, approach to The Mummy, and Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz were a great couple in the movie, in the franchise. And this, to me, it's set up to be along those lines. It felt like another Mummy movie. And to me, we know the Mummy is universal. So I thought, oh, this is great. Disney's like taking another shot back at Universal for kind of stealing their IP with Doolittle. You know, it feels like that. So I thought this is great because it felt like it's a Disney movie 100%. And, you know, putting Disney on it isn't going to scare away people that like the Brendan Fraser movies. But I think there is an added cachet when they throw that last monster in at the end as kind of this hook. And when that monster comes up and the legend is real, when you know, Emily Blunt says that, to me, it's like, oh, this is just a delicious setup for a franchise of movies that could be released off of this.
For sure.
Oh, and Jumanji too, right? Doesn't it? It feels like Jumanji, you know, it's in that Jumanji space, The Mummy, you know.
And I guess to finalize it, this goes in that category that we've talked about before, like a popcorn movie. Like, you're not going to take it serious. It's pure entertainment.
Right.
It's not going to be like, I don't know, emotionally jerking you in either way, like whether that's anger or sadness or call to action or any of that stuff. You're just going to sit down, have, I don't know if I had to guess, I didn't even look at the timing, an hour 52, you know, it's probably less than 2 hours, you know what I mean? So you could get through quickly.
Yeah.
And it's just a night out with for some fun with the kids. And then everybody gets to be all cheery when they leave, you know, because they had a good time.
Yeah, I'd love it to be an hour 45 so you could actually like have a new movie every 2 hours in the theater, you know?
Oh, there you go. And then you can really make money. So with that said, let's get into what we're watching.
Yay. So I watched some stuff this week just because I ended our show last week and I was so disappointed in myself. that I sat down and I was like, oh, we have Hulu too. I forgot we had Hulu. So I looked at Hulu and I found, now I don't even know the name.
Must have been good.
It's like, hold on. Oh, what's the name of it?
Can't remember.
Oh, are you kidding me? It was so good.
A movie or a TV show?
TV show. Okay. So after I ended our show last week, I sat down, got on Hulu, and I watched The Orville. Have you seen The Orville?
The Orville? Never heard of The Orville.
So The Orville is a Seth MacFarlane space TV show, the likes of Star Trek. So I watched like the first season of The Orville many years, like a couple years ago, and then I kind of like slotted it away. But then I remembered that we had Hulu, and I logged into Hulu, and I saw that there's a couple more seasons of it. So I started watching it again. Still, a very quality show. And I don't know if you know Seth MacFarlane. You know, does Seth MacFarlane ring a bell?
Yes, I know who he is. Yeah.
So Family Guy, comedy up galore, you know, and this is live action and he stars in it. So it's kind of a different take on it. But you expect him to be farcical. You expect it to be comedy. And there's definitely comedic elements in it. But there are many things about like the promise of Star Trek where, you know, we're going to tackle social issues and we're going to deal with real issues of our time that Seth MacFarlane does wholeheartedly. And he does it without, you know, the comedic angle, you know, like he deals with some serious issues. So I love that idea. I love the way that he does this. It's a quality show and I think it's done, but it is amazing. And now that it's Fox, it's going to be part of the whole, it'll probably live on Hulu forever, but it's still kind of an amazing extension of Gene Roddenberry's promise to society to showcase things about humanity.
So did you binge the whole thing?
No. I watched a couple episodes and I think I had 3 nights.
Oh, so you're not finished with it yet?
No, I watched like 5 episodes, I think.
Okay. Now, how many seasons are they in?
I think there's 3 seasons.
Oh, you're done. Yeah. I mean, it's over then. It's not coming back for you anyway, right?
So I'm almost done. Right. It doesn't matter if they're a fourth or a fifth.
You know, anything else?
I think that's it. Oh, you know, we got caught in this YouTube hole this morning.
I've been there.
What was it? It was this Tiny Chef.
Tiny Chef?
Have you heard of this Tiny Chef? Oh, man. The Tiny Chef. Is that what it's called, Bryce?
On YouTube? It's like an animated like clay guy?
It's like clay. Yeah. He's like a little round.
Yeah. The Tiny Chef show.
Do you see it?
Yeah. I looked it up.
Do you see it?
Oh, my God. It looks hilarious. I'll have to watch some.
Oh, it's amazing.
Oh, he's like a ball of fuzz or something.
And it's super short. It's
a cooking show for humans of all ages.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a ball of fuzz.
Oh, I'll definitely watch them.
It is amazing. And if you check it out on Instagram,
videos.
The Instagram is kind of the best because, you know, the videos on the website are great. But Anne was showing me this morning. She said, oh, but you have to watch when he talks to like stars. Cause there's one where he calls Kristen Bell.
Okay.
And he has a conversation with Kristen Bell, but he speaks in gibberish. So you can't even like understand what he's saying. and you know, it's just the cutest thing you've ever seen.
We're going to watch.
And it's completely nonsensical and it's phenomenal. I mean, him talking to Alexa on a rainy day. Because he doesn't speak English, he just speaks gibberish. Alexa has no idea what he's talking about. And the denouement is that Alexa just like orders the craziest thing online and puts it in your shopping cart. But it's phenomenal. Watch it with the kids. The kids will love it.
Will do.
It is a good time for all.
Will do. Looks good. You know, and it's so funny that this thing comes out and then people would say like, oh, everything's been done. There's no way you could do anything new anymore. You know, it's like, and then like there's a gibberish Tiny Chef guy. It's amazing.
I ponied up cash for this. I bought Ann a t-shirt and flip-flops. And hopefully they come before we listen to this episode, because it is her birthday. And I got her some stuff. We took, you know, I took helped take her out. And but this is it. I was like, I don't find many things that she's into like this. So it was hilarious. She was up all night. She woke up, couldn't go back to sleep. And last night she was like, she got caught in the Tiny Chef hole at like 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. And I was like, why are you shaking the bed? And she was laughing so hard at the Tiny Chef.
As sophisticated as Anne tries to come off, I could just say right now, she's not sophisticated.
How about you?
So we watched a number of things this week. Early in the morning when we're doing like our indoor trainer workouts and stuff, we were watching Rotten on Netflix.
Uh-huh.
And it's like the Avocado Wars, like the Wine Cartel, you know, sugar and, you know, like burning the sugar field so everybody can have like cheap sugar and what, you know what I mean? It's like all this.
Oh my God.
Like how horrible the food industry is, you know, and how like how much organized crime is within the food industry and around the world. Oh yeah. It's
really
pretty, like, I'm sure what they're saying is true, but it has to be like over exaggerated,
dramatized.
Complete. I mean, I'm not saying what they're saying is false, but like Americans love avocados. And now 30 million people go to work each day for a nickel so they can have their cheap avocados. You know, it's like that kind of a thing, you know? And it's like, okay, sure. Sure, I'm never going to have guacamole again. Super Bowl Sunday has more avocado consumption than any other day to include the past 10 years. You know, it's like they come up with these weird stats about like how, you know, like American, the American palate is destroying the world, you know, and
yeah.
But the next thing we watched was Red Sparrow.
Oh, you saw Red Sparrow. Was it good? I tried to watch Red Sparrow. What do you think? Tell me what you thought.
Okay, we watched the whole thing. Red Sparrow is more or less that like cold and calculated Soviet era. Like, you know, I have no emotion. I just do my job, and feelings and emotions be damned.
Uh-huh.
But then she hooks up with the empathetic and caring CIA American who's just there to do the right thing.
Right.
And, you know, they put the American in like the warm-hearted, like, even though you're one of them and a spy, I'm still going to try and recruit you because I want to recruit you because it's in your best interest and I'll take care of you. And, you know, it was like that kind of a thing, you know. The violence was a bit unnerving at times.
Yeah, that's where I thought it would lose you, because when they start grafting the skin off of the person.
Oh, you made it that far.
Oh, my God. I can't even watch this. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was like, ugh, you know.
Did you get to the end?
Yeah, I was. I might have. I forget. It's a long time ago. I watched a long time ago.
There was the twist. There was the twist. Did you see the twist?
There was a twist. Probably not. I probably fell asleep for the twist.
Oh, the twist. The twist got you. But and then here was my complaint, though. So throughout the movie, you know what I mean? Throughout the movie, she's doing all this stuff.
Right.
And you see all the stuff that's happening. She takes the glass. She looks at his passport, you know, and she does whatever, her uncle. But then, I mean, I'll tell you the twist if you're not going to watch it.
Tell me. Spoiler ready. We're ready.
So the whole thing was about getting the mole, right? Spoiler alert, if nobody's seen it, doesn't want to see it, but whatever, I'm going to tell it.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was the Russians wanted to know who the mole was, and it was her job to go out and figure out who the mole was. And pretty much she had animosity towards her uncle for sending her into this life as a sparrow.
Oh, yes.
And so she, the whole movie was her gathering enough evidence to frame her uncle as the mole. So that's how she kind of like turned the tables on her uncle. And these are one of those kind of movies that you see the thing go down, but then they go back and then they like explain all of her moves. They replay all of her moves to explain how she set him up.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, okay, I'm glad they did that on some regard, because like I didn't remember everything, you know, because it's like it's a fast moving movie or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But at the same time, do you need to explain everything to me? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a question of, do you trust your audience?
Do you trust your audience, right?
Or do you spoon feed them at the end, you know? And I think that it's like this, when at Sixth Sense, they did the same thing. They showed like...
They did, yeah.
Each little clip of when they did that.
That leads you to the conclusion of how you got there.
Right. And I think it's okay to do that, depending on how heavy-handed it was. I do remember now when you talk about that being the twist. Yes, I did watch it to the end. I guess I fell asleep for 5 minutes here and there throughout this movie. I mean, I probably missed some of it. Even some of the sex scenes, they aren't even like fun sex scenes. They're like the most objectified sex scenes in the world. So it's like, there's no pleasure in it. You know what I mean?
Well, like it's a sex scene and then the chick gets her jaw broken with a golf club.
Right? It's like,
baby, I wanted to get busy later, but that ain't happening. Or the other ones too, where it's like, oh wow, like they care about each other, but then you're like, but she's a sparrow, she doesn't care about him, you know? And yeah, you're right though, it was like super bizarre in that regard. And then I had to peel Clarissa off of the ceiling.
Yeah,
when the American's chief of staff, the senator's chief of staff, got hit by the truck, Clarissa about hit the ceiling and was clinging to it with, you know, I had to pull her off of there. So then we, here we go again. I can't, the name, Maglawi? No.
Mowgli.
Mowgli, yeah. So we tried Mowgli last night. We wanted to have like family movie night with popcorn and stuff. So we put on Mowgli. I don't know why I can't remember that name. So it's going along and the animals are talking and the kid's growing up and everything. And then Mowgli's down in the pool and here comes the tiger with the blood. Did you see it?
Mowgli is the non-Disney one, the Netflix one, right?
The Netflix one.
Right. I think I saw it. I don't remember it very well, but go ahead.
Anyway, so the tiger goes to take a drink of water, and as he's drinking and Mowgli's like down in the pool underwater looking up at the tiger, and the tiger's drinking and blood's dispersing through the water from his mouth, right?
Right, right, right.
Timmy lost it. He's like, I'm scared. We need to change it. Like, he lost it. So we had to turn that off at that point. It was too intense.
It's intense. It's dark.
Yeah. So we shifted over to Christopher Robin. And, you know, Ewan McGregor.
Oh, good.
And, yeah, it was great movie. Family fun for all ages. Super cute, super like insightful in the sense of Winnie the Pooh is so innocent in his quips, yet they're so, I don't even know, what would you say? Like
there's wisdom in his simplicity.
Yeah. He's very wise in his quips. And I mean, it was just an all around heartwarming, you know, and then did you see it or no?
I did not see that one. The family saw that one without me.
Gotcha. So
I was busy at work.
Gotcha.
Does that play into the themes of the movie?
Yeah, you're busy at work. So seeing as the family, oh, that plays into the theme of Christopher Robin. The family is doing
That's
stuff
what I'm saying.
And the dad, Ewan McGregor, is busy at work. And he can't be involved, right?
Yes, I think maybe I did see it after the family saw it.
So you don't remember it though?
I don't remember it. I saw it by myself after the family had already seen it. So I kind of checked out because it lacks some drama. I think to me it didn't have enough tension in it, and they do it on purpose because it's meant to, for the kids, you know.
Exactly.
So that lacking of drama really kind of put me to sleep. I was in a bad space, so I watched it in bed, and that's a nightmare scenario for trying to stay awake.
Yeah, I was saying, then you fall asleep through the. Well, no, there was drama. You just fell asleep through it all.
Exactly.
No, I would agree with you though that it did lack the drama and it lacked the tension that puts characters, you know, in that position that you want to care about them.
And I also, when you had talked about that, the motherhood series that was a little too close to reality.
Oh, Working Moms.
The Working Moms. And this was, it kind of hit me the same way, and it kind of turned me off to say, like, ugh, there have been times where I had to work. or I had to do something, or I had to do some...
It's too close.
Work at home or something. And it was just like, ugh, that's awful. Like,
it's too real. Yeah.
Too real.
But, you know, and it goes back to like movies like The Mule, for example, that I talked about last week. And when you think about The Mule or a TV show like Dexter or Breaking Bad or any of these, and you have this person who is like positioned to be a good person, but they're doing horrible things, whether it's making meth or killing people who, even though they're serial murderers themselves, or drug running because you, whatever, you got put in a hard space, you know, whatever that is.
Saves, yeah.
Then you start like rooting for the bad guy because you don't want to see him go to prison. Even though if it was real life, you'd be like, hey, buddy, like, you know, you're the one bringing drugs to my town. Like, screw you, you know? But because it's in the movie, right, you're like, like your heart breaks for the guy.
Yeah.
And I could say in Christopher Robin, there wasn't any of that sort of tension or anything that, I don't know, may or may not caused you to empathize with the protagonist in the movie.
Right.
But, you know, and then the end was all cute because, like, his family got to see, like, the 100-acre woods and, you know, and then, or wood, 100-acre wood, I guess. And then, you know, all the stuffed animals that come to life and where they live and everything. So that was, you know, it was cute. But I would say, though, and I would agree with you why it would be hard watching it by yourself. If I were by myself to watch this movie, I would have been bored and fell asleep and I wouldn't have been into it, I don't think, at all. Mm-hmm. But because I'm sitting next to my four-year-old and on the other side is the five-year-old and we're all eating popcorn.
Yeah. Like,
it's the camaraderie of the family that, and then you look at your kid in the glowing light of the wall panel, you know, and his eyes, he's got his big button eyes, like, oh my goodness, Winnie the Pooh's talking. And then when you look at it in that way, you're like, your heart warms because you know your kids are really into it, not that the movie is necessarily warming.
Right. And it is for them, and you're doing something for them that you're sharing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, all right, Ted, your mission this week is to at least watch one more thing for next week. Now, we just, I don't know, maybe it's because we didn't record Friday or Saturday night. We just had time and we watched some movies, you know, and
there you go.
Yeah, kind of opened us up and everything. And but yeah, I'll tell you, though, the here we go again. The Malagwe. No, Magal. Why don't I?
Mowgli.
Mowgli. Oh, my goodness. I'm not even doing this on purpose. I wish I was. It would, Mowgli. But man, I'll tell you. Timmy lost it, man. Like, I don't know if we'll ever get back to that one.
Are you going
to
finish it without him?
I don't know if I think it goes back to what I said about Christopher Robin. Like, as an adult, I don't know. I don't, maybe. But I think it's more like watching it as a family, though.
Yeah. I mean, I think they didn't intend for that to be for all ages, you know? I think it's definitely a darker sell than even The Jungle Book.
Yeah.
Which was the Disney's take on that same thing. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if you go back to see it, because I think the overall theme of it is darker too. So
yeah, maybe I will. Maybe I will. But anyway, I have some tiny chef to get to. So we better close this out. But before I do, how did your beer finish?
My beer finished wonderful, crisp, warmed up a little bit to give you the full notes. And it was a good suggestion from our friends over at Winer Liquor Depot, which I know Frank is a big fan of. So thank you to them over there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward for a picture. I'll take a picture of mine and we'll get this up there. And oh,
okay, cool.
And then I have to apologize, though, because I think it was like last week or week before. I don't remember which week. I didn't take a picture of my beer can. Because I put the beer can in the garage and I was like, all right, I'll take a picture of it later. And then I'm like looking for the beer can and I can't find the beer can. And one of my kids, I think, because I'll smash the cans and stuff, right? So they're like, there's an aluminum can. Smash! So I'm like, where the heck is the can? So I go looking in like the recycle bin or whatever, and I find the can and I'm like, ugh, somebody smashed it for me. So much for that picture.
You should have taken a picture of this smash can next time.
Oh, yeah. I guess I could have. I could. And it actually probably would have made for a better story than if I just had a nice picture. So. And with all that, right. Well, if they smash this one, then they're going to get cut because this one's a bottle. So.
Oh, yeah. How did yours finish out? You didn't say.
Oh, it finished out. Yeah, I think very similar to yours. It warmed up. It's to a point where, like, I think it smoothed out a little bit. A little bit of the bitterness bite got taken away. And it's definitely, like, citrusy for sure. But I think the bitters kind of smoothed as well. So in spite of going down the path of the citrusy grapefruit types that I'm not much of a fan of, I would say that I would definitely recommend this beer. So yeah, it's not as
cool,
like sweet and tart as some of those other ones I've had. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I will say thank you, Jimmy, for always being accommodating with our timings and things like that. We're doing this in the middle of a Sunday because Anne has so many events for her birthday weekend that right after, immediately after this, we're going to go out to dinner with Frank and Barbara. So it's a wonderful capper to our weekend, you know, dinner with them and podcasting with you. So thanks a lot.
All right, perfect. And I'm going to hang up and go fix the furnace. So because it's going to start getting cold soon.
All right. All right.
Oh. All right, man. We'll catch you. All right. Bye now.
All right. See ya. Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.